You're listening to HuntertonChamberRadio.com, sponsored by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. Our studios are located in the CenturyLink building at 14 Mine Street, Flemington, New Jersey. The content and views of our hosts do not necessarily reflect the views of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. To contact our station, call 908-782-7115 or email onair@hunterdon-chamber.org. Thank you to our sponsors and underwriters. Please remember to support them and buy Hunterdon, buy local. Visit www.hunterdonchamberradio.com for a complete listing of our programming.
Kansans disagree with a decision of the Supreme Court. It is important that all Kansans be treated with the respect and dignity they deserve. I'm Russ Jones.
This is USA Headline News.
Individuals and businesses with tax problems, listen carefully. If you owe over $10,000 in back taxes or have unfiled tax returns, U.S. Tax Shield can help you take back control. The IRS can seize your bank accounts, garnish your paycheck, close your business, and file criminal charges. Our team of tax attorneys can stop collections and get you protected. U.S. Tax Shield offers a price protection guaranteed quote to get you protected today. U.S. Tax Shield is A-plus rated with the BBB, so call 800-479-2697. U.S. Tax Shield, 800-479-2697.
Americans are clocking a lot of time in their daily commutes. Chris Fred of CityCard says a new survey shows that a person's daily commute really adds up.
People do spend a lot of time commuting each day, about 45 minutes on average across the nation to get to and from work, which is the equivalent of about 180 hours a year, or 5 work weeks, so to put that into perspective.
Chris Fred says it's no surprise that the major cities across the U.S. had the longest commute times. New York led the list with an average commute time of 73 minutes, while Miami had one of the lowest average commutes for a major city at 49 minutes. That time on the road is also hitting commuters' wallets, with the average person spending $10 per day on their daily journeys to and from work. Fred says Citi is trying to help people get something back from that time on the road with their new Thank You Premier card that rewards people for money they spend on commuting essentials like gas, public transit, and parking.
And from a cost perspective, it's on average about $10 a day to commute round trip.
Chris Fred of Citi Cards explains what factors goes into a city's commute time.
You know, usually it's a function of, you know, how many people are in the metropolitan area, whether there's public transportation or not, also factors into the amount of time that it takes for people to commute.
Russians are getting themselves killed taking selfies. Russian news agency TASS says there have been over 10 deaths and about 100 accidents in the country this year from people striking dangerous poses for a selfie. The problem is bad enough that the Russian Interior Ministry has put out a brochure with instructions on how not to get killed when taking a picture of yourself. I'm Ron Taylor, and you're listening to USA Headline News.
Well, good morning, and welcome to Modern Design. Our show is all about design in the state of New Jersey and all over the country, and the things that you can do to make your home more attractive, more desirable, and a better place to live. My guest today is John Schmidtberger. He is a renowned artist. He has a local gallery in the area. Say good morning, John.
Good morning.
Good morning, and welcome to Modern Design. Well, let's start with the weather, as I do every week, and see what's going on in weather. I think we're going to be a little stormy today, I think. Let's see here. Okay, the computer is telling me currently that today there's a 30 to 60% chance. That's a big range there. Of scattered showers and heavy rain with a high of 88 degrees. Tonight there's a 60% chance of heavy rain, then cloudy with a low of 69. On Thursday there's a 30% chance of showers with a high of 80. Thursday night there's a 50% chance of rain. I'm hearing a lot of rain. What about you? I'm hearing
doesn't sound promising.
But here comes the weekend. Friday, partly sunny with a high of 86. And mostly sunny on Saturday and Sunday, so a sunny weekend. So that's not a bad thing. If you're going to have a sunny period of time, it might as well be a sunny weekend. Well, if you're just tuning in for the first time today, my show is called Modern Design. I've been in the industry for 18 years as an interior designer. I also have a degree in broadcasting. And in January, an opportunity came for me to take over this time slot and talk a little bit about my work in the Garden State and what I do. And each week with Modern Design, I try to bring you resources and people that I work with and network with that can bring add value to your life. So John and I met. I actually don't really remember the impetus of our meeting. I know we worked with a client specifically because we did a photo shoot for a magazine. And then you have some of your art in my store. But why don't we go back to a little bit more, I came into your shop, and a little bit about you and your art background.
Sure. I started SFA Gallery about 3.5 years ago, more or less by accident. Hadn't really intended to get into the gallery business, but an opportunity came up, and a great space became available.
And it is a nice space. It's an interesting space.
A very interesting space. Set back a little bit from the main drag. A lot of light. An unusual space, not something you could really imagine doing, regular retail things with, but
right.
a really, really nice environment for looking at art. Before that, I did a lot of decorative painting, and worked in that industry for probably 20 years before that. At the time did my artwork mostly on the side. Now the situation is more or less reversed, and I'm mostly doing my own artwork and now showing other artists' artwork as well.
So what was the, did you start as a child just with color? Was there some sort of I always want to get from when I have a guest on the show, what was the thing that made you start to want to, do art or paint? Long before the gallery opportunity, there must be something inside of you that wanted to express yourself through art.
Yeah. There really aren't any artists in my family. There wasn't at least visual art.
Right.
But my dad was a college professor, and there were always reams and reams of white paper lying around.
Okay.
I noticed early on that my older brother, who I was very competitive with, was not good at drawing.
So you were judging him at an early age? Uh-huh.
And I found out pretty quickly that I was good at drawing. So
right.
I just kind of, over time, naturally, fell into that. And I think an uncle bought me a set of oil paints when I was in third grade, and I took some lessons with a neighbor, that kind of thing. And, after that, I was really just hooked.
And it was easy for you. A lot of people, especially, as a young person, if they don't get it right away, they sort of give up on it. But did you enjoy it from the beginning?
I did.
You switched from drawing to artwork?
I did, yes. I just always enjoyed it, and it came easily for me, and I just like the feeling. And
for those of us that are not that familiar with when a painting is done, does a painting start out as a drawing and then evolves into a painting? How does that process work? Let's say I want you to do some sort of landscape room, let's say the Frenchtown Bridge. I want to have that in my living room, and I like that inspiration. Does that start as a drawing or a drawing on canvas, or how does that evolve into be something that's a finished piece of art?
Well, it might start with a plein air painting. It might start with a painting that's actually done on location.
Okay.
Maybe a smaller size, something that's manageable. And then that might be developed into, a larger piece if that's needed.
But do you sketch it first to sort of get the visuals, the lighting, the shadows, the things that you do? Do you do that first?
I actually start pretty minimally. I do draw, and I draw very carefully, but very minimally. I'll typically take a little bit of blue paint and thin it way, way down, and just do a very rapid but careful drawing of where the, what the main composition is.
So is that where you're creating sort of the outline?
The composition.
Okay, the composition of the piece. And I guess the scale of the piece,
yes.
Right?
Yes, what's going to be included, what's not, the angle that you're viewing from, et cetera. And I might even wipe that out two or three times quickly, to really hone in on what I want. And then once I've got the drawing there, then, it's... It sounds simplistic, but then you're really just, you're adding the color. You're making a coloring book coloring it in.
You're creating a composition, or I always have to boil it down, but or an outline. And then from that, then you're sort of coloring it in.
Correct.
But I guess it is all about the coloring, because color is the absorption of light. So you have to manipulate shadings, and that creates depth, I guess.
Yes. you know, it all starts with, you know, what your composition is, and then just, you know, applying the colors and you know, sort of seeing how it's coming along, stepping back from it occasionally. And
So how did it progress then from that first painting kit you got to where you've become a successful artist?
Well, I mean, I always took art classes. Okay. I took a lot in high school. I think I remember winning a prize for that in high school. I did get a, and then in, I took quite a lot in college, but I was a I was actually planning to become a doctor.
Okay.
So I was pre-med.
Right.
And then after a couple of years of that, I realized that I just wasn't going to be happy with that. My plan was to be a surgeon and then paint on the weekends.
Wow. That's kind of interesting how that evolved and changed. A lot of people say don't ever take your major seriously. So I, as an interior designer who was a broadcasting major, I see sometimes things come full circle, but you never know how life is going to go.
Exactly. Yeah. So. And so then I changed over, and I then I completed a bachelor's in fine arts.
But were parents happy with that?
Parents parents were surprisingly okay with it.
Oh,
I remember they bought me a French easel, actually.
Oh, did they?
Yes.
Now, did you grow up in this general area?
I grew up in Hackettstown,
okay.
New Jersey, not too far from here.
Okay. So not far from the general area.
Yeah.
And then where did you get, it seems like a lot of your work that I've seen is landscapes. Where did you get the love of landscapes?
Well, in graduate school, I studied with an artist named Neil Welliver.
Okay.
And he passed away about 6-7 years ago, and he was a landscape painter.
Okay.
From Maine, and what he did was he went out and he painted small 2-foot by 2-foot studies, and then he went back to the studio and made very, very large, dense paintings of the Maine woods mainly. And I studied with him, and I learned a lot from him. He was also a plein air painter. In
you're,
a sense.
You're saying the term plein air. So
yeah,
I tell our listeners what that is.
Yes.
Okay. I'm trying to be sophisticated and pretend that I know here in studio. but I really don't. And plein air means?
I believe the phrase is a plein air.
Okay.
And that means, it's a, you know, French term meaning in the open air.
Okay.
And that kind of painting developed with the Impressionists, I believe. And they were really the first people to go out and do finished or completed works outside.
So do you think you're developing your own style if you're working with somebody that has a style? Do you sort of absorb their methods, if you will? Or is that how maybe it evolved for you?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you pick things up everywhere you go.
Right.
You know, technical things.
Is the ability, I'm sorry, is the ability to paint something that's innate in somebody, or is it something that, that can be developed? And I always wonder that. I think about these people that are singers and then their children are singers, and I wonder if that's because there's something that's genetically there, or is there they've been trained and they have the, you know, the to be able to do it because they've had the resources and the training and the time. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I do know what you mean. I think there seems like there's got to be some bit of it in there that's innate.
Right.
And then,
or at least the desire to want to do it, right?
Yeah, or just understanding, you know, your brain working in a visual way.
Right.
But then beyond that, it's really a lot of work.
Oh, sure. I would imagine this. Well, we have plenty of questions for you, but we're going to come up to our first set of commercials, and we'll be back shortly more with more of Modern Design.
Unionville Vineyards is the perfect destination for wine tastings and tours, corporate events, birthday parties, or your special day. Located in East Amwell, New Jersey, Unionville Vineyards offers an escape from the rush of daily life and a chance to relax in the beautiful countryside. Our tasting room is open 7 days a week, 12 to 5 p.m., excluding major holidays. For more information, contact us at unionvillevineyards.com or call us at 908-788-0400.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterton at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterton, the voice for mental health in Hunterton County.
This is Megan Jones Holt, the radio host of the Rotary Hour and president of Boxes for You. Why am I a member of the Chamber of Commerce? It can be summed up in one word: opportunities. Opportunities to market your business and yourself.
Hunterton Chamber of Commerce, building business, one business at a time.
And we are back with Modern Design. My name is Rich Scuderi, and I've been a local interior designer for the past 18 years. Started when I was 8. Nope, did not. Started when I was older than that. I am conveniently located at 1 U.S. Highway 31 in Flemington, New Jersey, in the Kitchen Expo Plaza. I share my space with John from Rugs to Riches, and we have about 2,500 square feet of space with everything from decorative items and small pieces of furniture to beautiful rugs, and some of John's wonderful artwork amongst our treasures in the store. So, John, tell us again, the name of the gallery is SFA Gallery, and tell us where you're physically located, your information, your phone number, and your website.
Sure. SFA Gallery is at 10 Bridge Street, Suite 7, Frenchtown, New Jersey. That's in the historic Gem Building, very close to the bridge. And our website is www.sfagallery.com, and the phone number is 908-268-1700.
Great, great. Well, I think the impetus for us meeting was, I think I had a client, maybe that was the thing, I had a client in Hunterdon County, we were doing the photo shoot, that may have been it, or just been, I was shopping for them for artwork, and they were lifelong residents of Hunterdon County, Flemington in particular, and they were looking for me to find a local artist that would represent the county and landscapes. So someone made me familiar with your work, and I came into your gallery, and like, this is it, this is exactly what we're looking for. And of course, the clients were very intrigued by what you did and actually purchased from you because it was exactly what they were looking for. Is most of your body of work landscapes, or do you also do other things? How does that work when you, because you certainly develop a style and you have a sort of a significant style, although some of your pieces do vary, of course.
Right.
How does that work?
Well, I mean, I studied with Neil Wolliver, as I mentioned earlier, before, and he was a landscape painter, painted mostly in the deep woods.
Okay.
I have basically different series that I've worked on over the years, like woods is one of them.
Okay.
Another one is I had a bather series for a while, which was mostly figures on lakes and rivers and the like, more a landscape, but like a populated landscape.
Okay.
In the last couple of years, I've really gotten into architecture.
Okay.
And that might be buildings, specific buildings,
right.
Details of buildings, or bridges.
Right.
I'm real interested in the intersection of the geometry with natural forms. So say you're painting it, you know, you're looking at a bridge. There's that intersection of the man-made and the sort of imposing geometry on nature, and then the nature behind that or around it. It's very interesting.
Is it harder to paint a building because it? I guess in my eyes, as I consider myself somewhat, if I could, of an artist, what I do in a different way, just or maybe the way I interpret things, is that if I look at a landscape, it's got great beauty, but there's shadows and there's interpretations. When you're doing a building, you have to be a little bit more literal, don't you?
You do. Yeah, buildings are much less forgiving.
Right.
Because if you make an error, you know, in the drawing on a tree or a field, chances are no one's going to notice.
Because the perspective is different. But when you're up on a building, you have to have some sort of a sense of balance and proportion, I think, right?
Yes.
And then you still play with shadows and all that stuff, too.
Exactly. But you brought up drawing before.
Yes.
And it's really important when you paint architecture to have rock solid drawing and dependable, you know, perspective and all of that. Because if anything's the slightest bit out of place, it's like you said, it's really jarring. But
it shows.
In my, you know, I did do some teaching many years ago, and one of the courses I taught was drawing for interior design.
Oh, neat.
Yeah. So we used to take, you know, students out to locales all over Philadelphia and sketch.
Wow.
And I would always teach, you know, the students to be able to draw rapidly and accurately. And if you can do something, you know, like that, you can pretty much do anything.
The gallery is beautiful, and I encourage people to come out to Frenchtown. It's a great Sunday afternoon or a weekend afternoon or even like a weekday thing to do when the weather is nice to walk it, have a little something to eat, sit by the river, take a hike. And it, you know, it's the perfect spot to do that. And
indeed.
Then cross over towards New Hope and so on. But I know you represent now other artists.
And
I do. How did that come to be?
You know, it initially opened the gallery just to show my own work and my wife's work, Corinne Lowen. And but over time,
who is with us?
Who
stadium?
Is with us? But being very quiet.
Okay.
You know, almost immediately, you know, I realized that I had an opportunity to show other work, and I was a little hesitant at first, but after a little bit of time, I found it very stimulating and interesting. Because a lot of times artists have a hard time looking at their own work. I don't. After I have my paintings up for a month or so,
right.
I start to go crazy looking at them.
And why do you become critical?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, it's hard to put that down. You know, you know that little yellow spot. I should have toned
right,
that
which
down.
Nobody you know notices or sees. But we sort of judge ourselves harder than anybody else.
Exactly.
We?
But having these other artists that I work with has been incredibly stimulating because they're, you know, their work is very different from mine. And also the sense of community of some of the artists that I'm showing now had not been able to show, and they were like mid-career artists like myself who's,
right.
You know, maybe their gallery's closed or their circumstances changed, but there's a number of people who are now painting and producing beautiful work who weren't before. So that's also very satisfying.
So for the gallery, how do you find talent or other artists? Do they come to you, or do you go out to look for their work?
A lot of people come to me.
They do.
But I have found many people by sheer accident.
Right.
Could I share one of
those? I would love that, yes.
One of my artists is a fellow named Dick de Groot, and he's 94 years old.
Wow.
And a Dutch-American artist.
Okay.
And I found him completely by accident. I had a neighbor in town who liked to... She walked her dog, and she likes to chat. And she said, "Oh, my father-in-law is an artist, and you know, maybe you'd like to take a look at his work." And at the time, I just opened, and I was deluged with requests, you know, to look at work. So I thought, "Oh my goodness, you know, this is probably
going to be terrible.
It's going to be
paint by numbers, right? With a kit, right."
But I guess his grandson or great-grandson made a website for him.
Okay.
And I looked at it, and I said, oh, my word,
really?
This guy is the real deal. And
wow.
I got to know him a little bit, and I won his trust. And we had a show for him last July. It was tremendously successful.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
He's so vibrant and doing things at 94. That's terrific.
Yeah.
I think that's what it's all about.
Exactly.
And paint is one of the things that you can do, my goodness, throughout your life.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. I found that very inspiring. I mean, I'm, you know, 54 now, so that if I lived that long, that would mean I could paint for another 40 years.
And wouldn't it be a wonderful thing to be that? That's what you can just devote your time to, and you know,
exactly.
and just enjoy that and do that. Now, besides, now you have some of your pieces at my shop, which are absolutely beautiful.
Thank you.
Are there other places besides SFA Gallery that you have your pieces that people want to look at them?
Currently, just SFA Gallery and your shop, and there's a small gallery in Midcoast, Maine, as well.
Okay,
wonderful. Camden Falls Gallery.
Yeah. Now, let me ask you a question, because, of course, this is modern design. This is all about artwork related to improving your home or office space. I guess my first question to you is, do people come to you with realistic expectations of what they're looking for their home? That's sort of a loaded question. Because art as decor becomes a very tricky issue for me anyway. Because art is very personal. And there are people out there that have a preconceived notion that they want their painting to match their blue couch. And there are people that are lovers of art and find a piece that has beautiful representation and shadows and it means something to them. And they find a way to make it work with their space. How is it for you when people come to you when they're looking for art for their home specifically to furnish their home?
Well, one of the things I encourage people to do is, I like to just talk to them and, you know, get a sense of, you know, what they like and don't like based on what they're looking at in the gallery.
Right.
But then I also encourage people, if they have a very specific spot that they're looking for something for, to just take a snap of it and send it to me so I can get a feel of what the space is like.
Well, that's smart. That's good. Do you ever go to their house first and see? I think you did that with my client.
Yes. That's actually the best way. Okay. And I have done that often.
Because I would imagine it's not only the space itself, but it's also the light that it brings in, because you want to reflect the piece properly, right?
That's correct. Yep. And also in my work tends to look the best at with a little bit of viewing distance.
Okay.
There's not a lot of surface detail at all.
Okay.
So, you know, in a narrowish space, you know, a sidewall wouldn't be a good location for that.
Right.
An end wall would be a lot better.
Do you find that more people just meander or come through your shop and see something that you like and just buy it and find a place for it in your house or their house? Or do you think that...
You know, occasionally, but it's much more, it's a real slow process.
Okay.
Generally for a lot of people. A lot of people will come in, you know, numerous times and look around and...
Oh, do they?
Yeah, maybe have a conversation, and then it seems like it's a slow gestation.
Now, are the people that purchase art from you, are they usually people that come back and then do it again? They're long-term customers, or is it sort of a one-off, or they're looking for something quite specific, or...
I would say it's, you know, over time it's changed. It's become more more people who buy one or two, and then once they've passed that point,
that's it.
Then they're addicted.
we're going to commercial because I have so many things I want to ask you in regards of art related to the home. But I'm going to start this before commercial. We'll come back to it afterwards. And one of the things that I was always very unclear about, and I think many of our listeners are too, is how art is priced.
Yes.
And you clearly, you know, you're an artist and what you do is beautiful, but you have a business and that means you have to pay the bills. So you have to charge for your artwork. So when you create something that isn't a custom piece for somebody or you make some pieces that you put some time into, is there some sort of how do you price a piece of art and one versus the next, you know?
Sure. For most fine artists, that develops over a long period of time.
Okay.
And I did make the mistake when I was much younger of overpricing my work.
Okay.
And there was a period where it began to pile up alarmingly.
Okay.
And just like a marketplace anywhere, I over time lowered my prices until
right.
things began to sell consistently. And then what they say is that, like, over time, like, you know, a modest, you know, maybe small increase year by year is what happens after that.
But there's no sort of industry standard, is there, for charging for a certain size painting? Or there's no sort of parameters. Whereas as an interior designer, there are some standards of labor rates and things to go by. With art, it's just sort of an open field.
It is. It's so much by reputation, previous sales, et cetera.
And I guess you have to sort of find your way to where people feel comfortable, maybe. I don't want to put words in your mouth.
No, it is. I mean,
I just think it's interesting because it's so tough. It's so non-tangible.
It is. And, you know, I did decorative. I had a decorative painting business before that. And it's the same thing. It's the need meets the supply. And at that the intersection, that's the correct price.
Okay. Well, good. Well, we're just about to come up to news. And we'll be back shortly with more of Modern Design.
You
USA Headline News. I'm Ron Taylor. Florida Senator Marco Rubio thinks Donald Trump's comments on Mexican immigrants coming across the border is taking attention away from a true debate on immigration.
Border security is a very legitimate issue. Illegal immigration is a very serious issue. What's happened now is he's made some other comments that that are less responsible, and those comments are now what everyone's focused on.
The Republican presidential candidate tells Fox News that Trump's comments about criminals coming across the border are giving politicians an excuse to not talk about the real issues. The Obama administration is announcing sweeping housing integration rules today. Cities and towns throughout the nation will be required to study their housing patterns for racial bias and report their findings publicly every 3 to 5 years. Communities will also have to set goals for reducing segregation. A children's charity is ending its relationship with longtime Subway pitchman Jared Fogle. The news came as the fast food sandwich chain also revealed it was suspending its relationship with Fogle as the FBI investigates child pornography allegations. Fogle has not been arrested or charged. This is USA Headline News.
Everyone knows the proper way to start your day is with a long, hot, luxurious shower. That's why we've created ProperSoap.com. We're called Proper because we're properly pure and natural, with no parabens, dyes, or harsh chemicals. 100% pure vegetable soap. We use rich shea butter and olive oil to moisturize naturally. And best of all, we think it's proper to give back. So when you shop ProperSoap.com, you're funding clean water and sanitation programs in villages across the globe. Shop ProperSoap.com and get proper.
For the first time, America's behavior expert Scott Farrell is offering you the Marriage Matrix. The system used for years to help save marriages is now available to you. The Marriage Matrix can save you expense, personal embarrassment, and maybe even save your marriage.
I'm America's behavior expert Scott Farrell. If you really want a shot at saving your marriage, get the Marriage Matrix today, and together, let's do this.
Call now, 844-HELP-US-0. That's 844-HELP-US-0. Or visit ismymarriageworthit.com.
And we are back with more of Modern Design. My guest today is my art guru, and that's John Schmidtberger. Am I saying your name right?
Yes.
Okay.
Very good.
And let's spell it first. So is it spelled the way it sounds? Is it phonetic?
Schmidtberger.
Nice Italian name, right?
Yes.
Go ahead, spell it first.
Oh, spell it. Okay. S-C-H-M-I-D-T-B-E-R-G-E-R.
Okay, and tell us again where your beautiful gallery is located.
Okay, the SFA gallery is at 10 Bridge Street, Suite 7 in Frenchtown, New Jersey.
Wonderful. And a phone number for you?
908-268-1700.
And the website?
Oh, and the website's www.sfagallery.com.
Okay, and when we were on break, we were talking with his lovely wife, who's sitting here very silently, but we were talking, and she had made a couple suggestions of things. And one of the things that, and one of the reasons I wanted to bring you in on Modern Design is that artwork is very important to me in finishing a home and creating another layer or another sense of depth. I mean, anybody can go to a store and pick up a picture that's, you know, mass produced and put it on the wall. The colors may fit, but it's not really artwork. I think artwork completes a home. There's a richness when you have original artwork in a home. But I also think for many people it's quite intimidating. Do you find
yes.
that as well?
Yes. I mean, I see it on the faces of people walking into the gallery.
Right. They're sort of frightened, aren't they?
They're a little. Yeah. It's a little off-putting, and I don't blame them. I've gone into galleries and felt very uncomfortable, as a professional artist.
But I also think that may be an attitude. And when I came into your studio, I felt it was very approachable.
Yes.
And you certainly have given that off, that it's very approachable. And one of the things that you did for me, which was terrific, was we previewed some of your work, and then you allowed me, I had this customer, we were having a photo shoot of their home that I completed in Flemington, you allowed me to take some pieces out on consignment. Do people do that in your shop, and how does that work if they see something they like?
Yes. We encourage people to try things out. Hang it up for a while, see how it feels in the space. Most people really appreciate that.
And sure, if you're going to make an investment in art, you want to be able to do that. It's like trying clothes on. You want to make sure that they fit the space in this case, and that's good. And I think that takes away some of people's tensions if they're going to go ahead and buy something and get it home, and they realize, oh my goodness, I this doesn't work in the space from here. It's not what I thought it was going to be. So that's it. And then also, I think you're not inexpensive, clearly, but you're not ridiculously over the top. I think you have a commodity, and it's beautiful. And you're known, actually, in local circles. Even before I worked with you, your name has been out for what you do. So I think your art is financially approachable as well.
Yeah, that's important because there's kind of a division, in the art world. There's the there's a level of expense that, you know, more or less ordinary people are excluded from. Okay. And then there's an entire market out there of really, you know, wonderfully talented artists that are selling work that is reasonable enough that it's oftentimes less expensive than, say, like you were talking about, the mass-produced print and
right.
You know, with a very elaborate frame on it that
right.
really doesn't have any personality. It doesn't, you know, there isn't anything to it at all. You might have, you could easily find an original piece of artwork for maybe less than that.
I know, and so much more meaningful, and probably value over time.
Yes.
How does that work as far, because I think people are so intimidated by, they look at galleries, they look at, that was good, right? They go to galleries and they see paintings that are zillions of dollars, and then and they get sort of intimidated. How does that work when an artist's career takes off after they pass on? I mean, what's the catalyst that causes that explosion where art becomes just unapproachable financially?
Well, in an individual career, I mean, it often only occurs, like you said, after the artist passes away.
We don't want that to happen. I'm really talking to myself. Okay.
But, you know, for a lot of artists, in mid-career and late-career artists, there's often a time there where they're producing just sensationally good work that's really affordable. I mean,
but, you know, good work is, I think, to me, in art more than anything else, interior design, everything, it's perception. So
correct.
Who is setting the tone for that? Is it art critics? Is it the public? Is it just how you're perceived? Is it something that you generate that's saying, oh, this is a guy that I want his work? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, there are collectors that collect only for financial reasons. At the very high end.
Sure.
But the majority of people who...
Because there's name recognition, is that why?
Yeah, yes. The artist's name recognition, their career, like, you know, they've had lots of write-ups, museum shows, et cetera. So the bet on those artists is so sure that...
Right.
Everyone's so sure that the price is going to continue to go up. And that is more or less the case. I mean, uh-huh. There's, you know, good quality fine art really never depreciates.
Okay.
But the trick is, you know, finding things before that,
right.
Before that occurs.
Very much so. So one of the things I haven't mentioned yet is, do people come to you and say, now you're known for landscapes, but I would imagine you do other types of paintings as well.
Mm-hmm.
Do people come to you looking for portraits?
Portraits really aren't my thing. I mean, what you would call a traditional face portrait,
right.
I don't really do. I do them for fun on
okay.
my own,
right.
my own charcoal and pastel. But
if someone came to you, would you refer them to another artist?
I would, except that I do portraits in the sense that I often do what I would call figure portraits, which
okay.
might be, two family members sitting on a dock, from a bit of a distance where they would be recognized.
Okay. Oh, so you do that type of
yes,
thing.
Yes,
yeah. So neat. So figures, but the perspective is different.
Yeah, like a portrait of a person in a space as opposed to just a likeness, just their face.
Is that because you find that that works with your talent, or that you find that more interesting?
I like it, and I like that, and I don't like the portrait aspect, because people get very hung up about their appearance.
Oh my God, yes.
The psychology.
And skewed about what it actually is.
Exactly.
Except they're for not, us, of course, right? We just know.
They're not reasonable. About,
right.
Actually, I did have a client who, I did a family portrait of a whole family walking down to the ocean.
As a painting,
a okay. large painting, like
okay.
3 by 5 feet.
Right.
And turned out that the mother in the family was having an issue with the teenage son, and because of the composition, he looked very much larger than her.
Right.
So she asked me
reduce them
to change the composition to balance their relationship.
That I did. Funny. Oh my God! Let's wipe that gesso of the canvas down. That is hysterical. That is funny. You know, a couple of weeks ago we had a photographer on it, and we talked about photography as art in a home as well. And he'd say people would come in for portraits for photography, and when they were, you know, sort of editing them a little bit. They say, younger. And he said, finally, if I make you any younger, no one will recognize you that it's your picture. So I guess to a degree, people have vanity or issues, as we all do, and that's probably the case with you as well. Mm-hmm. But let's take portraits out of it. Do people come to you, John, and they say, I know who you are, I'd like you to do a painting of my home or my property or my landscape? Do they come for that with specific requests as opposed to buying something that you already have?
Most people buy things that I have already done, but okay. Occasionally there's a request. Well, I don't want to say occasionally, but for example, I had one just a couple of weeks ago, a gentleman and his wife had been into the gallery.
Okay.
And, they had a beautiful house in, Lumberville.
Oh, Lumberville. Lovely. Yeah.
And the husband contacted me and asked me to do a painting of their house.
Right.
And hang it in the gallery and to surprise his wife.
Oh, nice.
And it was rather short time frame, but I was able to do it. And their house was just absolutely beautiful. I went and looked at it, and I couldn't wait to paint it.
Well, because it was a... Because it was a surprise, did you have to do it mostly from a picture he gave you, or
I did a site visit and some photographs, yes. Okay. And I was able to get it done really quickly, and then we framed it just like all the regular paintings in the gallery, and hung it up, and the title was Surprise.
Oh, nice. Very nice. And they came in, of course, and looked at your artwork, and all of a sudden there was their home. That was wonderful.
Yeah.
So when you are painting something that's like a home or a bridge or something like that, do you have to always go back to that painting in the space it's in, or can you do your sort of composition and then take a picture with you and do your colorations and your shadings inside, or do you have to do that?
Yeah, it depends on the scale. Like if it's a smaller piece, and time permits, I likely might do it on site.
Right.
But larger things, I used to do very large plein air paintings, but it's, you know, the 10th time that your canvas gets blown over by the wind, it starts to be problematic. So I'll work in the studio from smaller paintings and sketches or smaller paintings and photographs.
Well, does that make your artwork somewhat seasonal? Are you taking ski vacations? Because in the depths of our horrible winters that we had the past couple of years, are you not able to do as much?
Well, believe it or not, the last couple of years, after not painting much in the winter at all for a very long time, I discovered those wonderful, they're these little heating packs that duck hunters use.
Okay.
And they put them in their gloves and boots, and it allows you to stay out in the freezing cold longer. So I actually, not this past winter, the one before, I did maybe 15, 16 snow paintings.
Well, you know, there's and I don't know what the market is there for it, but I think there's a haunting beauty in winter scenes.
There is, but, you know, it took an absolute nosedive after last winter.
Well, I predicated on what I'm about to say is, because we've had such bad winters, I don't know if people are purchasing winter scenes. They don't want to see them. And I've actually heard two of my clients say, well, that's very pretty, but I don't want anything that represents winter.
Exactly. I've started to pull out paintings saying, well, I have these nice snow scenes and so much.
Right. Isn't that funny? I mean, you know, autumnal scenes are beautiful. I mean, one of the things about living in Hunterdon County in this part of the country is that we do have the change of season. And if you're doing paintings of landscapes in our area, it varies so much. So I think that gives you a lot to go on, you know, whereas if you're painting in California or in Arizona, you sort of have changes in light, but not necessarily changes in terrain and colors and textures.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Is there a favorite time of year or inspiration for you to do your landscape paintings?
I really love the fall. I do love the fall very much.
It's almost like a rebirth as much as spring is, isn't it?
Yes, and the opening up of the palette, you know,
it's gorgeous.
Dimming down of the greens and all those vibrant colors coming up. It's really awesome.
One of the things that attracted me to your work in particular is that I'm sort of a colorist. I write a blog called the Color Guru. And I consult for Benjamin Moore 2 days a week, just doing color exclusively up in their one of their North Jersey locations, where I go to people's house just solely doing color. So that was attracted me to your work, because you have a very good use of color, I think.
Thank you.
Vibrant and beautiful colors that, you know, make it attractive.
Thank you. Yeah. The last couple of years especially, I've sort of very purposefully pushed that chroma up a lot.
I just think your colors are beautiful, and I wish we had television. We are going to, and I hope to have you guys here again, we are going to start adding a YouTube channel, and we will be filming this. So hopefully next time we could bring some of your artwork in. Well, we have to go to commercial to pay for this. So if you give us a few moments, we'll be back with more with John Schmidtberger and more of Modern Design.
Hi, I'm Joe Peters of Weichert Realtors. Buying or selling a property can be one of the most expensive undertakings you face in your lifetime. And selecting the right realtor to help you through this process can dramatically affect your success or your failure. I have personally helped hundreds of buyers and sellers through this process in achieving their dreams and goals in 100 in Somerset County areas over the past 10 years. I believe that this experience should be a smooth, seamless one for you and not a roller coaster ride. But the best judgment as to whether or not I deliver this to my customers is their reactions in their own words.
One of the things we liked about Joe was that he would return calls within minutes if he wasn't able to pick up.
You know, Joe guided us through the process of selling our home and made a complicated transaction appear seamless.
How do I accomplish this? By approaching every transaction from a business perspective. Initially, I try to fully understand your goals and dreams and make them my own. Then, I go out and take the mass amounts of data that we have and distill them down to a few understandable action points to be considered. Finally, I control the entire process through technology to ensure that we're not going to hit any speed bumps along the way. The end result to you is a smooth, rewarding customer experience. Let me show you how to take my level of professional expertise and put it to work for you in achieving your real estate goals and dreams. I can be reached at 908-238-0118. Thanks for your time.
Hey, this is Big C of Good Morning Hunterdon on HuntingChamberRadio.com. Like what you hear on Hunterdon Chamber Radio? Now you can take it with you. Download our Hunterdon Chamber Radio app from iTunes and Google Play Store now. Get schedules, station information, listen live, or to the latest podcasts. Everything in the palm of your hand or in your car during your commute. Get the HuntingChamberRadio.com app today.
The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce is proud to present HuntingChamberRadio.com. All business, all talk, all community. Bringing you local news, information, events, and informative programming. Proudly serving the businesses and residents of Hunterdon County, New Jersey.
Hi, I'm Pat Smits, law offices of Patricia Garrity Smits, LLC. The Hunterdon Chamber is a great resource to find the best local business people and meet new friends.
Hunterdon Chamber of Commerce, building business, one business at a time.
Florida Senator Marco Rubio thinks Donald Trump's comments on Mexican immigrants coming across the border is taking attention away from a true debate on immigration.
Border security is a very legitimate issue. Illegal immigration is a very serious issue. What's happened now is he's made some other comments that are less responsible, and those comments are now what everyone's focused on.
The Republican presidential candidate tells Fox News that Trump's comments about criminals coming across the border are giving politicians an excuse to not talk about the real issues. The Obama administration is announcing sweeping housing integration rules today. Cities and towns throughout the nation will be required to study their housing patterns for racial bias and report their findings publicly every 3 to 5 years. Communities will also have to set goals for reducing segregation. A children's charity is ending its relationship with longtime Subway pitchman Jared Fogle. The news came as the fast food sandwich chain also revealed it was suspending its relationship with Fogle as the FBI investigates child pornography allegations. Fogle has not been arrested or charged. This is USA Headline News.
Everyone knows the proper way to start your day is with a long, hot, luxurious shower. That's why we've created ProperSoap.com. We're called Proper because we're properly pure and natural, with no parabens, dyes, or harsh chemicals. 100% pure vegetable soap. We use rich shea butter and olive oil to moisturize naturally. And best of all, we think it's proper to give back. So when you shop ProperSoap.com, you're funding clean water and sanitation programs in villages across the globe. Shop ProperSoap.com and get proper.
For the first time, America's behavior expert Scott Farrell is offering you the Marriage Matrix. The system used for years to help save marriages is now available to you. The Marriage Matrix can save you expense, personal embarrassment, and maybe even save your marriage.
I'm America's behavior expert Scott Farrell. If you really want a shot at saving your marriage, get the Marriage Matrix today, and together, let's do this.
Call now, 844-HELP-US-0. That's 844-HELP-US-0. Or visit ismymarriageworthit.com.
Okay, I think we're back with more of Modern Design. We had a little technical glitch there, which happens from time to time. It's 10:50, so we have about 8 minutes, and there's a lot I want to cram in, so we're back on track again. My guest, if you're just tuning in with us now, is John Smitberger of the SFA Gallery, and we're talking about artwork in your home and how to judge artwork. And I think that's the biggest problem my clients have, is they'll see something they like, whether it be a couch or a chair or a table, and they don't know. They can pick things that they think are beautiful, like a painting of yours, but at the same time, it may not be necessarily right for their home, color or scale or so on. Isn't that very true about artwork?
It is. It is. And, you know, having worked a little bit in the decorative painting and decorating industry, you know, the difference between something in a shop or a gallery and the home is great.
Right.
And you know, at first I didn't want to believe that. I would someone would take a painting and you know, put it in a particular place and say, and then get back to me and say, hey, you know, I don't think this is this isn't really right. And I wouldn't want to believe that because you know, my feelings about the painting, but
right.
it really does matter, like what wall it goes on,
sure,
the size, the
sure
scale, the framing, you know,
right,
in order to make it really look optimal.
Sure, because and how you're the artist, so you set a visual image of something. So if someone's doing it sort of head on with not enough perspective, it's probably not going to really showcase your work properly, is it?
Exactly. Yeah. There's a lot that goes into really making it ideal. Even something as simple as the level that it's hung at.
I mean, right.
You know,
this is very critical for me. Do most people hang paintings too high?
If the husbands hang them and they're tall, you'll be craning your neck looking up at them.
It's all predicated on the person that's hanging them, right?
Yes.
And when a 6-foot-2 guy like myself does it, they're not going to be, you know, appropriate for a 5-foot-2
yes,
woman.
Correct.
What is really optimally the right level to hang a picture? I mean, I'm always told eye level, but eye level varies because bodies vary. So is there a general rule? I know it really depends probably on the piece, the size of the room. What's the best barometer if we're hanging artwork?
I've been told that if your eye level is in the upper third of the painting.
The upper third.
Yeah. But it depends greatly on the architecture. Like, say there's a wainscoting.
Okay.
Say it's a space above a fireplace.
Right.
You know, a space between, you know, two windows. That all affects it.
Exactly. Because it's not a perfect surface. There's also things that go on. Because a lot of times, actually, what I do is I create an art rail when I do spaces, and I'll do a wainscoting and so on with an art rail. So then, you know, your height is elevated a little bit. So I guess you'd want to compensate with the type of piece of art that you have there, so the perspective is correct.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yes. If it's if it has a lot of perspective in it, you wouldn't want it to be, you know, too high.
Right.
You know, whereas, you know, a different type of piece might work, you know, that didn't have a strong perspective might work
right
perfectly.
Now, as I recall, the last time I was in your gallery, a lot of pieces, and then we went upstairs and there were a lot more pieces, but not a lot of the pieces were framed in the gallery.
Okay.
Do you do that to suit the person or the piece, or am I wrong about framing as opposed
to? Okay. No, you're right, except that recently I've contracted with a local woodworker to make some cherry floater frames for me, which are now like what I'm using as a standard frame.
Right.
And what I mean by floater is a painting, a frame that doesn't actually touch the edges of the painting.
I'm familiar because I remember you having that was sort of your style and went along with sort of the woodsy rustic style that I think that you produce. And it works well with your pictures without making them something else.
Exactly. You don't want, I mean, a lot of plein air artists really like, you know, heavy gilded frames, and I find them really distracting.
Yeah, I think they probably maybe take away from the piece itself, probably.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I guess when people are using artwork as fashion for their home, maybe they're trying to actually incorporate it into their space.
Yes.
So do you do your own framing, or do you send it out? Someone comes to you, they love their piece, and they want you to frame it. Do you actually outsource it and frame it, and then...
Yes, I have some some different companies that I use, but I'm mostly now using this this local fellow who's making those for me.
Do you if someone wanted a heavy frame or a big black frame or a gold frame or you know frame to match their daughter's hair or whatever, do you ever say no? It's my piece, and I won't.
I would probably say I would very much prefer if you didn't put that gigantic frame on that, but. In the end, after I sell the painting, it is no longer mine.
It's theirs, yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's another thing I wanted as an artist. When you sell the piece, it's no longer yours. Do you have a sort of a separation anxiety when it leaves?
Well, it's interesting because there's very few. Over the years, years ago, I used to be very attached. And I think that's part of the reason that they began to accumulate alarmingly.
Right.
But
I'm looking to your wife when you said they're accumulating. Okay, good. She's smiling.
Well, we're both painters, so you can imagine the storage problem that we have.
Sure.
But I've gotten over that. And there's just a few, you know, mostly ones that have my children in them or the like. That I just don't want to part with.
John, we're getting, unfortunately, down to our last 2 minutes. It just goes by so quickly, and there's so much I didn't want to ask you. But just some general tips for people who are purchasing artwork for their home in terms of size, scale, frame, anything that you can sort of just give us some general guidelines?
It's really good to identify a place, you know, the place where that you want the piece to be.
I think that's very important. Start by that, right? The place where it's going to go.
Yes. And then, if you can have the dimensions with you or have a little, you know, have a photograph on your phone.
That's actually a great idea.
So I always ask people for that. Oftentimes people will visit and I'll ask them to email me a photograph of the spot that they're looking for, and then I will just keep that in mind.
Right, and that's critical because it's proportion, it's scale, it's color, it's the amount of light that goes into the space. That's really key in buying artwork. I think that's smart, and this way you're representing your art the way it should be represented.
Exactly.
Wow.
And making people very comfortable doing that and not, you know, feeling like they're going out on a limb, taking a big risk, etc.
Okay, and then one last time for our listeners, they got to come see you, especially where the weather is nice. Can you give us your information again of how to reach SFA Gallery?
Sure. SFA Gallery is at 10 Bridge Street, Suite 7, Frenchtown, New Jersey. The phone number is 908-268-1700, and the website's www.sfagallery.com.
Well, John, thank you for being my guest today. We learned so much about art. I know I definitely did.
Oh, you're very welcome.
Come out and see his artwork and their artwork. It's lovely. The colors are exceptional, and it drew me to your studio. And I think you're very gracious, and I think come take a look at and invest in a little bit of artwork. Okay, until I see you guys again at 2 o'clock, we'll be doing Modern Design 2, our interactive show. Go out there today. I heard it's a little sticky, so be careful. Maybe bring an umbrella with you. But we'll meet me back here in studio at 2 o'clock when we have Modern Design 2, Design Dilemmas. Until then, until I see you this afternoon, have a good mid-morning afternoon. See you later. Bye-bye.
USA Headline News. I'm Ron Taylor. An Air Force pilot is back at his home base a day after being involved in a deadly mid-air collision over South Carolina. 20th Fighter Wing Commander Stephen Jost says Major Aaron Johnson managed to eject safely after his F-16 hit a Cessna plane.
He has been transported over to Charleston, Joint Base Charleston, for medical treatment, examination.
The NTSB says the two people aboard the smaller plane were killed. The collision left a debris field across a wide area north of Charleston. Joel said Johnson is very experienced and was doing a routine training mission when the collision occurred. More heated debate is expected today in South Carolina over a bill that would remove the Confederate flag from statehouse grounds. The South Carolina Senate formally approved the bill yesterday with a 36-3 vote, but now it heads to the House, where some members are opposed to removing the flag. Hillary Clinton is critical of Donald Trump's remarks about undocumented Mexican immigrants being criminals and rapists. In a CNN interview, Clinton said she was very disappointed in Trump, as well as in the lack of a clear condemnation from other Republican presidential candidates. This is USA Headline News.
Howdy, folks. It's me, Colonel Sanders, here to talk about the Mighty Shark. My $5 fill-up with chicken tenders and all-new FLG sauce will have you wishing you had extra rows of teeth to rip your prey to shreds. And my mashed potatoes are so rich, you'll want to swim through them. So stop into any of my restaurants, which are located inland and far from the shallow coastal waters where most shark attacks occur, and have a $5 fill-up with us. Kentucky Fried Chicken. It's finger-licking good.
Offer includes three tender, side biscuit, cookie, and medium drink. Pricing and participation may vary.
Bob was miserable. His website was invisible, buried 3, 4, 5 pages deep. No one could find Bob's site, not his neighbor, 6 employees, or even the dog. Then Bob found Tizzible, T-I-Z-Z-I-B-L-E, the most powerful local search booster on the planet. Now everyone locally is finding Bob's website. Business is booming. Bob's happy. And so is the dog. Catapult your business on the map for customers searching for companies just like yours. Get Tizzible at Tizzible.com. That's T-I-Z-Z-I-B-L-E.com. T-I-Z-Z.